I'm going to give you a clue. He's a former world heavyweight champion.
I fucking don't know.
That is David Arquette's WCW music.
That'd be a theme song to every internet wrestling fan currently.
Oh, I think God.
When they're talking about Raw, that'll be constantly what they bang on about. We're not going to take it. Oh, that's interesting. He was a world champion. That's ridiculous, isn't it? Just shows what idiots WCW were, really, let's be honest.
I'm quite happy with that one, to be honest. it's not a bad little intro. Obviously, I'm John Cooper.
And I'm Steve Emerson.
And this is episode 11 of the Kings of the Ring podcast. And this week we've gone out of our comfort zone, really, haven't we?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, with Samoa Joe.
Samoa Joe, yeah, exactly. For us in England, I suppose we did get TNA, but it was quite fucking hard to, like,
keep up
with the independents as such, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the way I used to watch if I used to watch TNA, it would be on YouTube. Obviously, people would put it on YouTube, and that's how I would read the results. I think, especially during Christian's run in TNA, I used to keep up with it.
Yeah.
Because obviously we're both big Christian fans, aren't we?
Yeah.
I used to keep up with it majorly then, and there was a few interesting little storylines with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so I have seen a decent amount of Joe and his promos and stuff. Main Event Mafia was always one of my favourite.
It was good, and even when he was with like that TNA front line, when you had him and AJ and Daniels stuff, was really interesting. Another thing as well is I couldn't find any of his Ring of Honor stuff on YouTube. Scouring the internet for fucking hours. The best I could find, which is probably the best starting point we can go with, is Samoa Joe versus CM Punk in Coventry, weirdly enough, at TWC International Showdown, was called.
It was in 2004, in front of 3,500 people, who got to see an early CM Punk and a very early Samoa Joe.
And apparently as well at the time, that was the biggest crowd that the pair of them had fought in front of, which is quite phenomenal, really,
that
when
is,
you think
that is ridiculous.
Of the amount that they both wrestled in front of now.
Yeah,
like,
especially Punk.
Also, like, first thing before I even call the match, is how small is that ring?
Yeah, it's tight, you can tell, it's noticeably tiny.
Really, really small. I mean, another thing that's interesting about this match is obviously if you've seen the Mick Foley DVD, was he saw a lot of these two fighting each other in the independents and plucked a pair of them to Vince McMahon. Which, from what I gather, CM Punk was signed off the back of that, but Joe wasn't willing to drop the weight that he was told to.
Yeah, because they wanted, I think in 2004 especially, you look at Vince's idea of a superstar was. It certainly wasn't CM Punk, but at least CM Punk was trim.
Yeah.
So he could have looked at putting him into a cruiserweight position.
Yeah.
But Joe was 280 pounds, only 6 foot and 280, and his body shape is poor, really. Obviously, there's nothing wrong with that, as you can tell, as we can tell through his working. It doesn't gas him. It doesn't stop him from working. But obviously Vince is all about, or especially in 2004, was all about the portrayal.
Yeah.
Of the look.
Yeah, I agree with that. Another thing as well is they quite, before the match, they talk about CM Punk's straight edge lifestyle.
Yeah.
And they say no drink, no drugs, no promiscuous sex. I just wrote, he's fucked every diva in the locker room in the last 10 years.
Supposedly.
I'm pretty sure CM Punk has promiscuous sex. I think that's probably his wife. Shoot wrestling to start the match.
Yeah.
Punk slaps Joe, then exits the ring, runs into the crowd to lap it up. That made me laugh.
Yeah, that's just typical Punk, isn't it? Yeah. It's a bit at all. Yeah, then gets back in the ring. Joe slaps the shit out of Punk. Like,
oh, yeah, no, it does. I love the chance as well of you got bitch slapped.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I suppose that's an independent thing.
Go then into some mat wrestling back and forth.
Yeah, test of strength into a pin attempt by CM Punk. Joe tries fighting back, but both start some great chain wrestling, actually. Yeah. Joe lands some heavy kicks to Punk. And then get the rest spots quite early, don't you, with a side headlock.
Joe no sells. I don't know. Is this before or after the rest spots? I can't remember.
Go on.
Really, no sells. Joe Punk basically puts about three or four kicks into Joe.
Yeah.
Joe completely no sells and acts like a bit of a beast, and gets Enziguri on Punk.
That was before. I think completely missed that. No, that's true. I did write as well at that point, in the words of JR, they both have educated feet. Yeah.
Anyone that used to hit a kick in the late 90s, early 2000s had educated feet.
Yeah, definitely. Joe gets, does the face squash in the corner quite early.
Yeah.
Joe in control, and his offense always seems like it has a purpose. That's the best thing I can say.
Yeah, very much so. Everything looks impactful.
Exactly.
It's something that I'm a real big fan of, that if your offense looks like it hurts, you're halfway there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with his wrestling. It's very no-nonsense. It's not, you know, there's not like loads of what you call pretty wrestling moves, but everything he does, you think, oh, that looks painful, or he's hit, you know what I mean? But yeah, I like Joe's style. Punk tries to cut him off, Punk tries to come back, but Joe cuts him off with a one-arm slap, which looks horrendous. You can see the size of the ring was causing issues as well in this match, right?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, their timing was slightly off. That's when I wrote down that if this match was in 2008, 2009, 4 or 5 years later, it would be absolutely epic.
Mm.
At the time, you can tell that they're both quite, not green, because they've been wrestling for a while, but they're not as honed as we got used to seeing CM Punk later on down the line.
They were quiet, though, weren't they? It was only 2 or 3 years in the business. That's as green as you can get, like, especially when you've only been doing independent wrestling. Maybe. Like,
I just think, like, once you got used to seeing some of the matches we see of Joe's later on, and obviously the matches we used to with Punk, they were better.
Yeah.
They had everything locked down. They had the characters locked down. They had everything. Their wrestling was tighter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, another thing you got from the pair of them in this match was you could see how much the pair of them loved the business.
Yeah.
Kind of like it in everything they do. Commentators write off Punk quite early as well by saying Samoa Joe's too good for him. Joe hits a suicide dive and he moves so fucking quick for how big the guy is.
They say at the time that Punk has, at this point, has never beaten Joe.
Nah, he hasn't. Apparently, in Ring of Honor, they had a rivalry, I think it was a good 6 months or so, where Joe was just constantly beating Punk, but every match Punk was getting that little bit closer until I think eventually he won. But again, I could be just swinging and missing because don't know a lot of Ring of Honor, but as far as I know, that's how their rivalry went.
Yeah.
Punk hits they call it a grapevine DDT. I've actually got to say, I've never seen it before. Like, he hammerlocks the arm, doesn't he? I've never seen that before in my 20 years of wrestling watching. That was quite good. Punk hits a moonsault. Snap power slam by Samoa Joe as well.
Yeah.
You're starting to get the near falls here. I love Joe's snap power slam, actually, to be honest.
I don't like it, no. That's where I put it's not as clean cut.
Mm.
I think it looks sloppy.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think it looks sloppy.
Okay, no, that's fair.
I like his offense. I think the motion of his offense is very good. I think that power slam is just sloppy. I mean, we obviously did Randy Orton last week.
Yeah, so Randy Orton's so, like the definition of the perfect house then.
Yeah, yeah, so like it kind of compare it the two, there's no comparison.
No, I agree with that. I love this spot though. Powerbomb by Samoa Joe for two, and then he turns it straight into the SDF. I liked that, and you see him do it quite a lot throughout the matches we cover. As Punk nears the ropes, he breaks it and hits a senton splash on his back for a 2 count. Tornado DDT by Punk.
An interesting tornado DDT. Did you not sort of think it was a bit
weird?
I don't know if it was meant to be like that, like that angle, or whether it was just a botch, I'm not sure, but it was a strange tornado. See, it worked.
Yeah, it did work.
It worked. There was nothing wrong with it.
Nah.
But it was a strange DDT.
I think a lot of it, you could tell with this match, is, as you said, because of how green they are, is how over-enthusiastic they are to put on a good show, and maybe some of the spots aren't as clean.
Yeah, they overcompensate on a few of the spots, I think.
Punk attempting the Pepsi Plunge, which as far as I know is a pedigree from the top rope. Punk changes his mind and goes for a sunset flip powerbomb, which Joe reverses into a Hurricane Rana, and then charges and hits a huge clothesline for a 2 count. Joe's clothesline, he does it a couple of times. And
they are big.
Oh, they look like they could take your fucking head off. Jogging chance for both men. Two Enziguris and a Shining Wizard for two from CM Punk. Punk again goes for the Pepsi Plunge. Both men exchange slaps on the top rope. Joe eventually gets out and hits the Muscle Buster for three. Good match.
It was watchable for me.
Yeah.
Again, if we have them to wrestle later on down the line, it would get an 8.5 probably.
Yeah. I gave it a 7.
I gave it a 7 as well.
It's
a watchable match.
Yeah.
If anyone hasn't seen it, it's well worth just popping it into YouTube and having a look. It's worth a watch. It's interesting to see both of them at an early stage.
Mm.
But for me, it is only a 7. It's a decent match. It's a decent watchable
match. Yeah, definitely. I also wrote, independent shows just seem so like intimate in the way it is. Obviously, it's all quite a close-knit group. Obviously, we were speaking last time about IPW wrestling at some point, and we'll get down and watch it and get our first taste of independent
wrestling. Yeah, it'll be good, yeah.
So then we go to Samoa Joe's career in TNA. He's had his run in Ring of Honor. He's won the Ring of Honor title, I believe, and then he's come to TNA. And he basically we pretty much covered most of his undefeated streak, haven't we?
We covered a lot of it. Obviously, he starts the first match we've got is the Chris Sabin match, isn't it? From No Surrender.
Is it No Surrender? I thought it was Final Resolution. Well, it's one.
No, Daniels is Final Resolution.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, it's fine.
This is Chris Sabin at No Surrender 2005.
Yeah.
Now Joe's. Joe's currently unbeaten, obviously, as you said. First thing, whenever I watch TNA, the six-sided ring, I don't know how I feel about it.
I thought the exact same thing watching it. It was like, I don't necessarily hate it, but I don't see what it brought to the product.
No, I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I think it sometimes makes the timing for the wrestlers in the ring look sloppy, but I think that's to be understood for them, like doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's it doesn't. I don't really have any opinion either way. To be honest, with
you. Yeah. I mean, the other thing I wrote as well, TNA at this point was almost a bit of an independent product.
Yeah. How bad are their music?
Yeah.
Chris Sabin's music is horrific.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's absolutely terrible.
Yeah,
it's like a generic like WWF Attitude Create a Wrestler music.
Yeah, like that's one of the musics that gets put on like a SmackDown game that you.
It's really bad.
I agree with that.
Really, really bad.
I also wrote, I loved the X Division at this point. You had some fucking really good talent that were in the division at that point. I can't really speak too much nowadays because I haven't really seen Austin Aries and Joe.
Because at this stage, I watched a bit of it. Yeah, you've got Sabin, you've got Joe, you've got AJ, you've got Daniels,
you've got Petey Williams, Kazarian. Like,
they're all decent wrestlers.
I just wrote Joe dominant really early on.
He no-sells a lot of Sabin's blows, which obviously is what they want to do.
Sabin attempts the cradle shock. I can't actually remember how that goes.
No, I can't either, to be honest.
But doesn't
but, like, he does a drop kick into the turnbuckle.
Yeah.
Which just before that, when, and then when he tries his finish and couldn't pick Joe up, then obviously the commentators start saying something which I'm going to completely rant about. I'm not sure whether now or later.
I'll do it later
after, because obviously we'll talk about the same thing in all three matches.
Okay.
Basically, the commentators say that Joe has never been dominated like he currently is.
Right.
In this match.
Okay.
Because Sabin gets a little bit of offense in.
Yeah.
Then Joe gets back on top.
Yeah.
With the running knee in the corner, which always looks pretty damn vicious.
Yeah. I wrote everything Joe does as a character in the ring has a purpose, like I said earlier. Such a dominant performance by Samoa Joe as well. I said it's 6 minutes in, and I can't really remember Sabin doing a hell of a lot other than what you've just covered there.
The big drop kick off the ropes by Sabin afterwards.
To start his comeback.
Gets a bit of momentum.
Yeah.
Top rope, guillotine leg drop.
Yeah.
Tries the cradle shock again. Can't do it. Again, the commentators say, we've never seen Joe dominate like this before. German by Joe. Very stiff though. It looked pretty sore.
With a bridge for two as well.
Yeah.
I obviously wrote great snap power slam. I don't mind it too much. Two by Joe.
Yeah.
Springboard tornado DDT by Sabin. I found that pretty impressive.
Very
actually.
Good.
Power bomb for two by Joe, which he switches straight into the STF.
Yeah.
Love it. Great spot.
I put much cleaner than John Cena's STF.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
It looks a lot tighter.
I agree with that. And then as Sabin's attempting, Joe switches it to a crossface.
Yeah.
And then as Sabin's getting closer to the ropes, he switches to the Rings of Saturn, which I really like because it's kind of like.
It was good. I'm a big submission. And Joe seems to have a lot of that in his locker. I really enjoyed that spot. I thought it was a great character building. Cause for someone that's been in it for 6 months unbeaten, whereas with Goldberg in WCW as he was coming through unbeaten, it was the same thing every time. It looks like to me, with Joe's moves, is he tended to mix it up.
Yeah.
And he used to do different submissions. It was a different kind. They could have easily gone down the route of Goldberg and had Joe squash everyone in that X division because he's much bigger and he's much stronger. He probably could have done. But I like the way they looked to make him a submission machine.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was good booking.
Yeah.
For once, you can't say it often for TNA, really, but it was good booking.
Well, in fact, my next comment...
Up until when they made him lose to Kurt Angle, which... We spoke about AJ.
I actually wrote at that point on another side note to that, Joe is so good at playing the monster, WWE, this is how you book a monster heel.
Yeah.
As if I'm pointing out a TNA booking better than WWE.
No, that's right though.
You know, if you look at, for me personally, Night of Champions, I didn't enjoy as much because it was all about even Steven booking to get Cena to look strong again when it didn't. That's not the story that needed.
I think the one more realistic to talk about between Joe and someone else in WWE is Joe and Bray Wyatt.
Yes.
They are very similar in stature, in size. But you can
cult following.
Cult following as well. Because, in all these matches, Joe is meant to be a heel.
Yeah.
But he has the crowd 50-50 in all of them.
Mm.
Absolutely 50-50. Yeah. It's basically the internet wrestling geeks are in the crowd and they focus on supporting Joe.
Yeah.
All you hear is the real gruffly mid-20 man's voice saying, let's go Joe.
Yeah.
So that's the support he's got.
Mm.
You tap into that.
Yeah, no, I'm not putting Joe in the same category as Lesnar either.
I'm just saying, as far as
booking and storytelling
goes,
that's how you book a monster.
My point is just it's more realistic to thingy him and
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Joe goes for a superplex, Sabin breaks out and hits a running powerbomb for two, which actually went pretty impressive. I know half the work's done because he's up there already. You still got to have some sort of strength to just not drop him and have some control.
The match has got a lot better now.
Yeah.
At this point, it's starting to get into a rhythm.
Yeah, I wrote another cradle shock attempt by Sabin. Joe slides out and Sabin hits an enziguri and goes to the top.
One thing after the running powerbomb, which I put impressive as well, I put the crowd are buzzing. They're well into it, like massively into it. Like, and as you're a big mark for this. That when the crowd are in it,
definitely. Go up. Definitely, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't necessarily bother me, but like I think that it can add something to a match.
Yeah. Sabin hits an enziguri, goes to the top. Joe cuts him off and nails the muscle bust out, followed by a rear naked choke for the win.
Love the rear naked choke.
And Sabin passing out, and in fact, throughout all of these matches, not many people tap. Did you notice that?
Well, yeah, but I think that they want him to be the fact that once he's got it on, you're going to pass out quicker than you're going to actually want to
tap. I gave it a 7.
I gave it a 7.5.
Yeah.
I thought it was better than the angle. Joe won. We watched.
Yeah.
I think if you put that on WWE pay per view, people would say what a good match.
Yeah, definitely.
I think I've always been a Chris Sabin fan. I think he's decent. I think he's one of those ones that's got a bit of a rough deal, especially with injuries.
Yeah, because he ruptured his knee, didn't he? He'd come back from that, and then literally within a week, he'd done the other knee.
Yeah.
Like, how's your luck? Can you imagine that? 6 months of trying to fucking build yourself back to get your career going, then you do the other knee within a week.
Sabin was in the Motor City Machine Gun.
He was, yeah.
They are, I'll go on record to say, one of my favourite tag teams of all time.
I actually can't wait till we do another tag team podcast and cover, hopefully, someone like a Team 3D or someone like that to watch a Motor City Machine Gun match.
Shelley and Sabin were brilliant.
Mm.
They were absolutely brilliant. They are by far one of my favourite tag teams. They'd be in my top five.
Yeah?
They'd be in my top
five. Very strong one, yeah. I mean, saying that, I mean, obviously, I love Edge and Christian. I'll always have a fun spot for the Dudley Boys, but I suppose I like tag team wrestling, but once I have a favourite tag team, I don't really think about it, but that's...
Maybe that's a podcast we could do later on down the line. Our top five tag teams rather than look at individual tag teams.
Because the APA didn't work out as well as we planned.
So we don't ruin the illusion that we have.
Yeah, don't destroy our memories. So next, we go to the end of the year. Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles at Turning Point in 2005 for the X Division title. Now, in between this point, I got a bit muddled up here because I thought Joe won the title in the triple threat match that was voted match of the year that year, but it wasn't. AJ won it.
AJ won it, yeah.
Which I was a bit disappointed with because me and Henry was both a bit like, oh, can't wait to sit there and watch that for Samoa Joe. And then
I've heard it's a special match.
Yeah.
I have never actually sat down and watched it all the way through. But I look forward to we'll do an AJ one at some point.
Yeah, definitely.
And look at it. But that was a bit annoying. I'll put the exhibition title, big fan of the division.
Yeah.
X Factor stats, though. Lol.
I did.
It's like, what are you up to?
I laughed, but then do you know what? I like the fact that with a secondary title, they put at least a little bit of effort into it.
Yeah, I don't never understand really is all of these, like, you never get any promo packages. Did TNA not really want to do them? I mean,
I was scouring to try and find at least a video package for this podcast, and I couldn't find mine anyway.
No.
I mean, I'm going to try and look later when I edit it, just in case, like, I've maybe typed something in wrong, I've got a wrong pay-per-view. But no, they didn't really. They sort of built the stories with that. They let the commentators build the story.
Yeah, which isn't too bad, but I mean, I suppose because we've been brought up on WWE, we're like big fans of promo. Yeah. I am a huge fan of promos. I'll sit there sometimes on board and I'll watch like top 10 promos. Of
I'll sit there and do stuff like
because
that.
Because they really sum up rivalries well.
Yeah.
It's quite enjoyable.
Definitely. I mean, the other thing as well, when you talk about there not being a video package in this match, Joe got his match after the last pay-per-view attacking Daniels and giving him a concussion. He come out to the ring wearing a towel covered in Daniel's blood. Every need at this point to have a video recap for someone that's a new fan.
Just to show, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Also, I'm really looking forward to watching the early AJ versus Samoa Joe matches. Like, obviously, they've probably had many more in the years that we haven't watched TNA. But at this point, both young, both hungry, both...
Champ versus winning streak, which is always a very good storyline. No matter who it is, it's a very good storyline.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as the match goes, AJ goes straight after Samoa Joe. I wrote at that point, WWE really missed a trick missing out on a pair of these. Imagine them on SmackDown in 2005, like as the brand, when you think, or 2006, when you think Rey Mysterio was a world champion, having a pay-per-view rivalry with Charlo.
Would, let's be honest, would AJ Styles and Joe cut it on that SmackDown roster though? Really? Like, you look at that roster at that point of Jericho, Rey, Edge, Guerrero, Benoit.
Well, Guerrero died. Benoit's about to go to ECW. Maybe not 05, but you look at 06 draft when ECW came in and there was no angles, there was none of that.
Yeah.
And you had like your great Carlys, Mark Henrys,
At that point, for someone like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, what year did Kurt debut? 08? 07?
Oh, what, in TNA? 06.
Yeah. 06, they're probably looking at, wow, we've signed Kurt Angle.
Oh, definitely.
Christian is already here.
Yeah.
Like, we could be going somewhere. Mm. I think maybe...
AJ
was a big TNA fan.
Because we get to the Angle match, I can have a bit of a rant about TNA's booking and how they dropped the ball around that mark.
Right.
AJ goes straight after Joe. AJ nails Joe with what I'd say is the best dropkick in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
I fucking love AJ's dropkick.
Impressive. And then obviously it's a massively split crowd.
Yeah.
And the commentators say we've never seen Joe dominating like this.
Again?
Yeah.
I'll be honest though, at least there's a bit of offence on this one.
Yeah. We've never seen Joe dominated like this again.
Yeah.
And I'm going to rant now.
Do it.
Because in the Chris Daniels match that we're going to do in a minute, the exact same way they start the match. Mm. Now, I haven't watched all of his matches in between, but if they're all the same, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you cannot... It annoyed me so much to the fact that when I do go on to the Chris Daniels match, I was bored because it was the same process for Joe's matches the whole way through.
Yeah.
Right? I hadn't really realised it at this point in the AJ Styles match because it was the second one. By the time I get to the third one with Daniels, I'm bored.
Did you watch all three consecutively, like Saban, Joe, Saban, Styles? And so this is the thing, I've done... Punk Saban, then had a break, watched the AJ match, then I watched Daniels and...
I didn't watch them all in order.
I watched them in order, I suppose, because I had a couple of days in between. Maybe I didn't pick up on that. But now you've said it,
every single one of Joe's matches, even to the Kurt Angle one in 08, they say we've never seen Joe dominate like this. Fuck off. Stop it. It annoys me when commentators and wrestling really belittles their fans in thinking that they forget.
Mm.
They don't.
You've got to think as well, TNA at that point was a very cult following. So if you was a fan of TNA, you'd likely have watched it for the last couple of years. So you know everything that's going on.
Exactly. Like, there's no reason for them to say that AJ is dominating Joe more than anyone else. Mm. Right? You can sell it by saying that AJ's on top.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have
AJ's really taking it to Joe like no one else. Because he probably was. You could do it that way.
It's different, but it's the fact that saying he's being dominated. They basically use the same words in four matches.
Yeah.
Joe has never been dominated like this before.
Mm.
Don't do it. At least change it up. It was poor for me. It was something that really annoyed me.
Yeah. To be honest, mate, I completely agree with that. AJ blocks Joe trying to suplex him to the outside, and then Joe kicks him up in the air and he lands face first on the apron, which looks fucking horrible. Obviously, at this point, TNA is a bit more risky with their performers, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I remember a couple of months before, AJ has a match with Pete Williams, and there's a spot in it. You know, you always used to see Angle attempt the German off the apron, but he'd never hit it.
Yeah.
But this actually gets hit. Now, if you think off the apron into the guardrail, how fucking dangerous that spot is from the point you've only got to hit your neck at the wrong spot and you're fucked.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know? Yeah, I'll put, then Joe picks up AJ and swings him into the guardrail. Such a monster. I wrote a really anticlimactic kick to AJ on the outside because he spent about a minute calling him up.
Yeah.
And in that minute, his head's next to the guardrail. So you think, oh, he's going to boot his head into the guardrail because he's just given Daniels a concussion. And then nothing really happens. And he just drop kicks him.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, oh, nice. Especially because you had Mike Tenay going, apes, you going, don't do it, Joe. Don't do it, Joe. Don't do it.
I put that later on in this one.
Did you?
The timing for these two was slightly out.
Mm.
I thought that they bodged a few spots
by
just being... And I don't know if it's... coming, but we're watching more and more matches and looking at them in more of a focused way, judging them.
Yeah.
But after watching WWE matches, and especially I think it's difficult coming from someone like Orton into this one.
Yeah.
Because you're judging it on Orton standards.
Yeah.
And the fact is that Randy Orton's timing is probably the best in the business. And here, Joe and Styles are slightly out. Mm. Well, not slightly, a couple of times they're well out.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this is the other thing as well. I know a lot of people complain about the WWE product being stale at the moment, which in some ways I can say yes. But if you put that next to TNA's product at its hottest, the match quality is still better in WWE.
Yeah, oh yeah, everything's still better.
Yeah.
Like, even the storylines are still better than TNA at its hottest. I mean, it's just, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, it is that we judge, it annoys me.
Mm.
I mean, I saw some ridiculous comment, just I'm going to go off on a tangent here but I saw some ridiculous comment on the WWE Facebook page the other day. Some bloke put NXT over Attitude Era.
Wow.
And
that's
I was like, what? And I looked at some of the comments afterwards. He was saying our match quality is much better than the Attitude Era, which it probably is. Let's be honest. Yeah. Like, the Attitude Era for match quality was not great.
Very average.
But fuck me, it was entertaining TV that you... There's no way that these people are glued to NXT like we were glued to the Attitude Era.
Well, there's a reason that the Attitude Era and that era of wrestling is called the boom period.
Yeah, because, of course it is.
Because... it wasn't just wrestling fans watching the product.
There's a reason why. Everyone. There's a reason why over 8-9 million people tuned in to watch The Rock and Mankind do the most ridiculous skit of This Is Your Life.
Yeah.
9 million people tuned in to watch that in America.
Crazy.
I know, obviously, America's got a huge population, but in wrestling terms, Nitro, when it was at its best, was doing a 4 mil.
Yeah.
Right, 4.5 mil. Raw at its best at times was doing 5 mil. Mm. This segment got 9 million people.
It's fucking crazy, isn't it?
Because the fact is that people enjoyed the entertainment factor of it. NXT doesn't have that, right? And I looked at the profile of this bloke that said it, and he must have been 21, 22.
So, yeah,
you never fucking watched it anyway.
Nah.
And that's what annoys me about. I would never try and say that wrestling, my favourite wrestling, is better than 80s wrestling. Because I never watched it.
Yeah.
I never saw any of it.
Mm.
I have never sat down and watched any matches from WrestleMania 1 or 2.
Yeah.
So I can't turn around and say so-and-so wrestled better than that bloke.
See, I've watched them, but I will tell you straight up, you're not missing a lot.
but I haven't watched them, so I would never judge it, and I would never try and say it. This bloke was 21 years old, he looked like, roughly. He'd be watching the Monday Night Wars now to to see what.
And be like, oh fuck, I didn't realise Mick Foley won the title on Raw. Oh fuck, I didn't realise Brett got screwed. I make you right.
It's ridiculous. People get carried away. And this is the problem with wrestling fans, right? No matter what happens, there'll always be complaints.
Definitely.
SummerSlam, just gone. Less than 2 months ago, was arguably one of the best pay-per-views we've seen in a long time. For match quality.
Match quality, booking as well. The whole lot. Yeah.
Right? forgotten about now.
Yeah.
Completely forgotten about, because the next pay-per-view wasn't quite the same level. Mm. We're now back to the fact that wrestling's shit. Mm. This era of wrestling's shit. Mm. Whereas the same people were turning around after SummerSlam going, wow, oh my God, it's amazing. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
It's like, look, you've got to take wrestling for what wrestling is.
Mm.
Yeah. Nowadays, wrestling is entertainment with that sport factor thrown in.
Mm.
Great. WWE is putting out top quality matches on a regular basis, even on Raw.
Yeah.
Right, I know people slag off Raw at the moment, but there are still some top quality matches going on there. Look at the Miz Ziggler Cesaro last week. Phenomenal match.
Yeah.
Great match, some great spots that you can't really put into words, the three man spots they were doing. No. It was very intuitive, and it was great to watch. Mm. And that's what annoys me.
Yeah.
Is people forget that.
Yeah.
When they then move on to the next set. And it's all because it all boils down to the fact they want something to moan about. Wrestling fans always want something to moan about. No matter what period of wrestling we're at, someone is being held down.
Yeah.
Someone's not getting the push that they should be getting.
Yeah.
Someone's at the top that shouldn't be at the top. He's obviously sucking up to someone. Yeah. It's not because he's good. He's got to be because he's sucking up to someone. It's always excuses. The fact is, John Cena still makes every single person watch his matches.
Yeah, and
because people either want to see him get his ass kicked, mm-hmm. or they want him to see him kick someone's ass.
Mm-hmm.
That he is the biggest draw ever in this business.
Yeah, absolutely 100%. Do I like that? No, but it's a fact. Let's be honest. People will sit there and people will sit there and they will moan about The Rock and Cena having two matches at WrestleMania. It's the highest selling WrestleManias
ever.
Pair of them. You know, I've got Marcus who will sit there and slag off that fucking Rock's part time. Right? It wasn't for The Rock coming back when he came back. WWE was on the drop. He bought that back up and they've kept him going since. Cena, as much as I can get pissed off about the way he gets booked sometimes.
We all do.
He is the biggest.
What people forget is, I think
we've gone off of that.
That's fine. We do one of these.
Yeah.
What people forget is that between probably 07 and 09, maybe 06 and 09 even.
Yeah.
WWE product was shit. Like, with a shit roster. Some people were building themselves up. You'd lost a lot of people. John Cena basically sold out arenas on his own.
Mm.
He carried that company on his own.
Mm.
And for 3 years, similar to what Austin did in the Attitude Era, Cena was the number one, and he drew every night.
Yeah.
He still sold out all the house shows.
Whether you loved him or hated him.
Oh, whether you loved him or hated him, totally. He sold out every pay-per-view. Mm.
And in fairness, Cena's done it against the wall, because Austin did pick up the ball and run with it.
But how
difficult was it?
He had The Rock.
He had Triple H. Taker.
Big Kane. Show coming in. Right, he
Jericho,
had Jericho.
Angle, Benoit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right, what did Cena have between 07 and 09? Carly. Umaga.
Jeff Hardy,
fucking hell, right? Yeah. Jeff Hardy, who was in his rightful place, in my opinion, in the Attitude Era, as a decent tag team wrestler.
Slash mid-carder,
yeah. He was main eventing at this point. No.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not right.
No, I agree with that.
And obviously, yes, you had Orton between 07 and 09.
He was hit and miss because he was constantly suspended every now and then.
Exactly. He was fucked up.
Yeah.
He was fucked up during that period.
Getting back to
anyway,
I think my next comment was Joe dominant in complete control and AJ loves to sell.
Yeah, he's a great seller.
And obviously he covered that in JR podcast. Face squash attempt by Joe, but AJ blocks it and tries to fight back but ends up getting hit, is what I wrote. But Joe ends up hitting it, sorry.
Yeah.
That might have been a sloppy spot you pointed about.
What a flapjack.
That is the next bit.
The flapjack was pretty sloppy, but no, it's just coming up now. As they're fighting back, Joe kicks him into the corner, and then AJ's AJ, yeah, AJ's just sort of like on the outs, on the apron, yeah, leaning in, but then he comes back out and then leans in again to take the kick that he should, yeah, have taken the first, yeah, time. Joe wasn't ready for,
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And that's where the timing issues were wrong. The spot was that AJ got basically thrown back, dropped over the ropes. He landed on the apron, didn't land that great. Then he sort of was trying to get back in the ring, but Joe was slow to get back to kick him. So AJ had to sort of struggle to get into the ring and then take the kick.
Yeah.
And it didn't look realistic.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Because you don't land from a backdrop and then struggle to get into the ring.
Yeah.
You just crawl back in.
I did write, because this must have been a few seconds later, the Pele kick from AJ Styles. Yeah. Which I always thought was a bit impressive, like a bicycle kick from in football, wasn't it? That's essentially what it is. AJ, who goes for a springboard, but gets caught in a powerbomb for two, and Joe immediately switches into a Boston Crab. As you said earlier about his submission wrestling, I just love the way he goes into it. It's very unique.
How good was it when he modified Boston Crab, though?
Yes.
I thought, why has no one picked that up? Why is no one using it as a finisher? That looks painful as fuck.
Yeah. Later on, it might be the Daniels match, but he applies a lion tamer as well.
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
doesn't get, obviously that doesn't get picked
no,
up.
No, he does that in a Saban match.
Is it a Saban match?
I think so, yeah.
Let's go AJ, let's go Joe Chance. AJ hits a moonshot.
By the way, the Pele kick is Pele, they just pronounce it wrong.
Oh, is it Pele? Oh, Pele kick, of course it fucking is. Slap me in. Deserve that.
very much deserve for not realising that he meant they meant
fucking
Pele.
Yanks. Yeah, sorry.
The Pele.
Fucking hell. AJ hits a moonsault, which today he calls something out, but I couldn't make out. He had something beforehand. What does he call it?
The Fosbury flop.
That's it.
The flip that he does, like the,
yeah,
where he runs and moonsaults, like, well, I don't even know what you call it. It's amazing.
How fucking impressive was that?
It's just AJ, isn't it? Oh, he is an athlete.
Oh,
yeah, Fosbury flop is cool.
I sat there, I listened to it a couple of times, but I can't figure out what the fuck he's saying. Hopefully, Emmy picked up on it, and luckily he did. And I wrote, but fuck me, that was impressive.
You know, the next move was also pretty impressive. When Joe gets back in the ring, AJ does a springboard onto the rope, and then an elbow to the back of Joe's head. Look, fucking painful. Yeah. I don't know whether that was a slight bodge or whether it was meant to look
that
bad.
I think it's because he does it quite a lot. That is one of AJ's signatures. Yeah. I think, again, the timing might have been off. And then seconds later, AJ hits the impressive moonsault into the reverse DDT.
Yeah.
After landing on his feet when Joe's attempted a German suplex.
That was phenomenal. That was phenomenal.
That's fucking like,
the athleticism of AJ, it makes me look forward to doing his matches.
Yeah, and I actually would say he fully warrants the name Phenomenal, because some of the stuff he does is crazy. Snap power slam for a 2 count from Joe. This is awesome Chance.
Yeah, it was.
Then AJ starts going all Rocky Balboa. Did you notice this? And he tells Joe to keep coming on, and Joe's laying kicks and stuff like that, and he's no-selling it and telling him to bring it on. It just reminded me of Rocky III. but that might have just been me. AJ bleeding from the mouth after the flurry from Joe.
Yeah.
AJ goes for a Styles clash, but nails him with a powerbomb for two when he doesn't quite get it. Pretty good, impressive.
Good strength. I mean, yeah, it was impressive.
Joe levels AJ with a clothesline after that. Like, inside Jesus out. Jesus fucking hell. Tiger bomb by Joe for two, which, I don't know if you remember Ahmed Johnson, but he used to call that the Pearl River Plunge.
Yeah, he did. that was WWF Attitude.
Yeah,
the wrestling
just,
game.
Yeah.
Was it the one before? It might have been the one before.
No, I think
that
you're
was
right.
Attitude.
I think
yeah,
you're
WWF
right.
Attitude on the PlayStation.
Yeah, AJ gets a Pele kick. Then AJ gets a Styles Clash, which looks a bit sloppy, the exchange before they get there. But I did write great false finish, because at that point you're like, oh wow, he's broke the streak. And Joe kicks out of two. AJ goes to the top rope. Joe pushes the ref into the top rope. AJ goes for a roll up, and Joe switches it to the rear naked choke.
Loves the finish.
Yeah.
Big fan.
AJ passes out and he wins the X Division title. I loved it. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. I'm like, great match. Natural chemistry despite the timing, and the attack after by Joe where Daniels comes out to save him to book the next match we're going into is great booking.
Yeah, yeah, it was good booking, yeah.
Because you save it for the end of the match, you think Joe's about to get AJ, then you get Christopher Daniels, who I believe when Joe jumped him originally, he was a heel at that point.
Daniels was, yeah. And
it was a case of, yeah, it was a double turn, and it was also a case of, you might be a heel, but this is someone who is dangerous and we need to take out of this division. And I love that sort of booking. It's sort of like, yeah, a bit like what they've done with the next.
Well, they were tag team partners, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which, as I say, it sets us up for the next match, which was Samoa Joe versus Christopher Daniels. Final resolution, is that right?
Yeah, my rant, this is where I put my rant in.
Yeah, you've said your rant now, though.
Well, yeah, I have, yeah. I still might as we go through the match.
Okay.
I've actually got a big rant, though, not a rant, but I've got an interesting tidbit to begin with. X Factors again, which is just stupid. Yeah. But then, Jeremy Borash's hair.
Right. Yeah, go on.
It's so late 90s boy band. It's ridiculous. He might as well be part of the Backstreet Boys, be the ugly member of Backstreet Boys, because we're in 2005, JB. What are you doing rocking a 1997 blonde haircut with hair gel you got from Dana Barber's?
My comment... Two comments, actually. Jeremy Borash looks full on midlife crisis with an NSYNC haircut. Followed by, speaking of bad hairstyles, Samoa Joe looks like a fat Rufio from Hook. In which, if I could find a Rufio comment, I'm going to put it in there. Rufio.
That is so dangerous.
That's enough!
Rufio, Rufio, Rufio. Oh! Yeah, sorry, I did pick up on that. I'm really glad you did as well. You covered everything I was thinking.
It was bad. Bad echo. Daniel start basically.
Well, I want it right. An interesting tidbit at this point. I suppose the company's only been going for 3 years at the point. Christopher Daniels at that moment was the longest reigning X Division champion in the company's history. Held it for like 11 months, they said.
I'd be surprised if he's not still now.
He probably would be. I can't.
11 months is a long time.
It was a long time.
I put Daniel starts off quick.
Yeah.
And then that's where I put every match starts the same. Have we ever seen this? Yes. Yes, we fucking have. You have, you saw it last month and 3 months ago, fuck off. Mm-hmm. That was basically, I know I ran in the last match about it, but that was what I'd written down for this.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I wrote a couple of pin attempts on Joe by Daniels, who rolled through from the schoolboy, and Joe applies the rings of Saturn after he kicked out, which I really liked.
Daniel, at this point, I'm not enjoying the match, by the way.
You're not. No, that's fair enough.
It gets better. But I didn't enjoy it.
Nah, that's fine. I wrote Daniels misses a moonsault despite Joe had walked away probably 5 seconds earlier. No, he's standing there and he goes for the moonsault. And by that point, by the time he's even springboarded off the ropes, Joe might as well just be leaning up against the ropes with his hand on his head. Yeah, I know. It was that long a gap.
Timing again,
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think with the X Division, I say wanted a fast pace. I think there's a lot of like over enthusiasm.
Well, it's like JR rants about Ring of Honor on his podcast that they're just needing to slow down.
Yeah.
That's what they needed to do here.
Yeah.
Hurricanrana by Gun?
Yeah, how far ahead are you?
Am I ahead, am I?
You are miles ahead, mate.
That's as much as I was enjoying this match.
Yeah, sorry. I'll just write, to be fair, right? Joe in control. Daniel tries to take Joe off his feet with a couple of clothesline, drop kicks him. Then runs at Joe, who hits a snap power slam for two. Daniels hits a code breaker before it was famous. Did you pick up on that?
I did.
Daniels hits a split-legged moonsault without splitting his legs on Joe for two. I love this, the Death Valley driver from Daniels. I actually popped a bit for that because I used to love the Death Valley driver, which was what Cena was doing before he adjusted it into the attitude adjustment, for anyone that cares. Joe gets a powerbomb for two. Daniels gets caught in a triangle, which he breaks out of after a couple of counters back and forth. Joe gets in the STF.
Yeah.
Both men fight on the top rope. Daniel sits down and attempts a powerbomb, which Joe switches to the Hurricane Rana and then follows with a brutal clothesline. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
BME by Daniels. For, is that best moonsault
ever? Best moonsault ever. I quite like, I like Christopher Daniels.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan because I think he's entertaining.
Yeah.
Recent times when him and Kazarian were back together.
Such, yeah. Bad influence.
Bad influence. Yeah. Great tag team, great on the mic. Mm. I enjoy their work. So, the fact I know what Christopher Daniels is like with his work and his mic work, the best moonsault ever, I like that name.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I think it's because if you didn't know who Daniels was and what he did, I don't think you'd like the move name. I think the move name works well within him.
It's very cocky, isn't it? Yeah. It's quite a cocky thing. Daniels hits a great kick on Joe on the outside and follows with an impressive slingshot elbow drop. I quite like that. Dueling chance now. And then this is where Joe sort of snaps, so to speak, and he does the face squash where he does kick Daniel's head into the guardrail. And then Daniel starts bleeding. AJ comes out as Joe's working on the head of Christopher Daniels. Daniels.
Yeah, we've missed. You've missed the Hurricane Rana.
Sorry,
then.
Have I?
The Hurricane Rana. Joe did a Hurricane Rana, which.
Oh, I said that.
Oh, did you?
Sorry. And then he followed with a clothesline, didn't he?
And then the bookend by Daniels.
I didn't hit the bookend, sorry, I missed the bookend there before the BME.
Right before it, wasn't it? He put him down on the bookend.
Daniels tries to fight back and goes for Angel's wings, but hasn't got enough strength. And then Joe nails him with a kick to the head.
Yeah.
Followed by the knee to the head in
knee,
the corner.
Heads, yeah. Now, Joe, This finish was a good idea.
Didn't quite execute it.
But they didn't
execute
it properly.
Yeah. So right. This is, I completely agree with that because I wrote, obviously Joe hits the muscle buster and applies the rear naked choke, but Daniels makes the rope. I'm sure you could have just finished it with that.
No. See, no, I agree with that because what they're trying to do, they want to show that Daniel is being the baby face brain.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't mind that with getting to the, like, off the muscle buster and getting to the ropes and the rear naked choke, no problem. What I don't like, he done a muscle buster to the chair and then starts kicking to the head and knee into the head. AJ takes too long to throw the towel in.
See,
that's what I didn't like.
See,
because I agree. I like the finish of AJ having to throw the towel in because Daniels won't give in.
Mm.
But it went on too long.
See, the other thing that I do have a problem with that finish, I know it's very nitpicky, but Joe getting a chair and using it in front of the ref, he's a blatant DQ.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, agreed. But their excuse is that Samoa Joe intimidates the ref. The ref was too scared of Joe. Which is not a good excuse, don't get me wrong, but they do try and cover that in commentary in a point. Right?
Yeah,
not,
yeah. And then obviously, as you say, AJ took what seemed like
It was too long. Once he starts kneeing him in the head, after the muscle buster the chair, and he knows Joe's not going to go for the pin, and Daniels isn't going to give up, throw it in. He took too long. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Go 6.5 out of 10.
I go to 6.5 as well.
I just wrote good match, but logical rules are logical rules. For me.
I didn't like the match, really. I mean, it was okay.
It was.
I liked the back part of the match was decent, but there was parts at the beginning that pissed me off.
Mm. Yeah. Obviously, at which point Joe has a bit more of a run as X Division champion and then TNA signs Kurt Angle.
And Joe gets a bit more mic time at this point.
Yeah.
He starts to have in between 06 and 08.
Yeah. And then obviously there's a rivalry between him and Angle that starts literally the moment Angle joins TNA. And to be honest,
which excited me as a fan,
definitely.
But as we said before, they booked Angle's debut wrong in the fact that Joe should have gone over.
Yeah.
In that debut match.
Yeah. Because it wouldn't have hurt Angle.
No, not at all.
I know it was his debut, so they wanted him to get a win.
He should have gone over in a screwy finish, is what he should have done.
Yeah.
Because you keep...
And I also have got to say, I mean, because of the rivalry there is no one better for Joe to take the strap off than Kurt Angle. It made complete logical sense from a booking thing. One thing I'll say, obviously, this is Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle for the TNA world title at Lockdown in 2008 in a cage match. Two things. I hated the entire pay-per-view being in the steel cage. I'm not a fan of the gimmick.
I don't like steel cage matches.
And I just think...
Yeah, I mean, nice. But what I did like about this, they don't use a cage.
No.
Once. Joe uses it once.
Right at the end.
But that's it. So that became irrelevant to me, like, even though it was in a cage. I forgot it was in a cage after about 2 minutes.
Mm. I also wrote, this was the pay-per-view slash match when I started to go off of TNA.
Was it? That's interesting.
Right, the reason for this, I mean, first things first, bringing out Samoan dancers to get Joe to the ring, it made him seem like a star. The little Kurt Angle video package they done talking about his reign as champion and how dominant he's been in the company since he came in, well done. Now, as I said before, I don't hate MMA, I really don't, but the MMA feel to this match for Kurt Angle to essentially, at the time, try and get Dana White to see what he can do so he can then go have a UFC career, I didn't like. For me,
I know what you're saying. It had too much of a UFC
feel. Too much of a UFC feel, rather than the rest.
I think once you get into the match, goes away.
This is the thing.
My first point is Kurt is in unreal shape.
Yeah, I was like, look how fucking skinny the bloke was. He was fucking.
It's the drugs he's probably doing at the time.
Probably, and obviously as well, as I say, where he's trying to fucking essentially audition for UFC to get in the light heavyweight division, he would have had to have dropped 20 pounds.
Yeah.
So yeah.
He's in unreal shape. His TNA music sucks.
I didn't realise he was the first ever TNA champion, Kurt Angle.
Once they changed the belt from NWA to TNA.
Because that's why I didn't obviously notice that. Won it in
a triple threat, I think.
I'll
put Kurt's defo on something. His eyes are fucked up.
Yeah, even a bit before the match when the introductions are going on, you look at him.
He's all over the gaff.
He's absolutely.
Joy's fucking dropping.
They did really give this match a big fight feel though, and they did.
Yeah, it was a big fight.
Midlife crisis is over for Jeremy Borash at this point. Karen Angle / Jarrett, not bad. Better actress than Diana, I wrote.
Yeah, only just.
Only just.
Swears a lot.
Swears a hell of a lot, doesn't she? I just wrote.
I'd be interested to know, like, I'd love to know how that all went down.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to know, because obviously Karen Angle joins TNA, she's still Angle's wife.
And fit.
And then, how does it happen? Like, Jeff Jarrett's a cunt.
Yeah.
Like, he must be a cunt.
Yeah.
Right, because how do they end up in a situation where Karen is with Jeff? I'd love to know.
I believe as well, at the end of this year at Bound for Glory, the year we're talking about, is the first Jarrett Angle match, and Jarrett was away from TNA at this point because his wife at the time had had cancer and was dying.
He's such a cunt.
Yeah, it's a bit close to home is probably the best term I could say.
Kurt, he's quite the man to have forgiven him.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree with that.
I think he openly admits he was in a bad place at this point and probably drove her away, but, like, fucking hell, still Jeff to do it. Like,
who was his boss at the time, really, wasn't he? Jeff was still a controlling stake in the company. Like, can you imagine that? You're the biggest star in that company and your boss.
It's like Vince nicking Deborah.
Yeah, it is that. Yeah, isn't it? Massively. Fucking hell. Which, weirdly enough, Deborah was bought in by Jeff Jarrett, just on a loop on that one. just to close that.
Basically, Jeff's just a fucking Dirty Perv.
Yeah, massively. I just wrote, we'll have...
I don't like him. I have lots of stories about him that make me dislike the bloke.
Well, the story, I mean, just for Michael to finish his tangent, the story of him on his last night with WWE holding Vince for ransom about dropping a title
to China.
The bloke's a cunt, and I'm quite glad that Vince McMahon humiliated him the night he bought Nitro.
I'm glad.
I'm like, fuck you. Now you look like a cunt. You thought you was going to the winning side, and that one's backfired. But then with that, obviously, he started this company, which now might be in the shits, but at first it was quite a good alternative, especially at this point. We'll have mixed martial arts to start then. Which for me, as I say, I want to watch a wrestling match. I don't mind mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I'll put up more of an MMA start. Yeah. I said Joe treads on Angle's toes. I was like, well, that's a bit stupid.
Joe goes for an early ankle lock. But Angle makes the ropes. Angle hits a suplex on Joe and then applies a side choke.
Yeah. I didn't mind that. It looks quite painful.
Yeah, no, it did. Which
obviously it is because it's an MMA move. Angle on top in the corner. Yeah. And a belly to belly overhead release was awesome.
Beautiful.
I forget. Every time I haven't watched a Kurt Angle match for a while, I forget that I love him. I do.
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same. I also wrote the crowd really into this right from the get-go.
Massively.
Angle attempts an armbar, Joe powers out. I just wrote with 15 minutes in and I'm sort of back and forth in interest.
Kurt Angle always makes submissions look good, and I think that's why the chemistry of these two is always good, because every submission they put on looks like they can tap out from.
Yeah, and it seems like that figure four is on for fucking ages.
It's in for a long time.
All right, Joe eventually rolls the pressure onto Angle. Angle starts working on the legs. Joe hits another signature brutal clothesline on Angle to turn the tide in the match. And at that point, I wrote, now they've drawn me back in.
Yeah. Joe's on top. Angle reverses the muscle buster into the ankle lock.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It was great.
Absolutely amazing. Especially when you think of the position Angle was in to manage to wriggle himself out to get into that. It's phenomenal. Kurt runs at Joe and Joe slams him bookend/one-arm slam.
Yeah.
Hits a powerbomb for two and then rolls Angle into the lion tamer. And
then into the STF.
Yeah. Then transitions into a cross phase.
Oh my fucking hell.
And do you know what?
No, it wasn't. And the best part of it is Angle then reverse it into the ankle lock.
Yeah,
great, great transition of move. Brilliant. It was so well done. Perfect.
And then Joe rolls back into the cross phase. At that point, I wrote, now I'm really into this. And I wrote, because I really want to sit there and watch a Benoit versus fucking Angle match. Now.
Because the cross phase, once he got him into the ankle lock, I didn't expect another transition.
Yeah.
So that surprised me. And when you can be surprised in wrestling, it's good. And that surprised me. I popped for it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair enough. Where are we?
And then what brilliant. Kurt reverses the fucking crossface into an angle slam.
For two. And it was, very nice spot I wrote there.
The whole spot was one of the best I've seen in a while.
Definitely. Angle goes back to the ankle lock. Joe tries to kick him off, but Angle holds on and eventually gets transitioned into the rear naked.
Yeah, because basically he tries kicking off, Angle holds on, but his back's turned to Joe, and he pulls the tights and drops him into the rear naked choke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Angle uses the ref to get out of it. I thought it was, because Angle's the heel at the time. Mm. I thought that was another good spot.
Yeah.
Good ring work. Good psychology. I think very good.
Then Angle went for the angle slam. Joe slips out of it, rams Angle into the cage. Nails a brutal kick on fucking Angle. Sets up for the muscle buster. Hits it for free and becomes world champion in what which was a massive moment
massive
for Samoa Joe. And the whole internet community as well must have popped big for that, to be honest. I'm going to be honest, I gave it a 7 out of 10 because the mixed martial art at the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah, no, this is the thing. If you didn't have all the fucking MMA stuff at the beginning, it would have been an 8, 8.5. It was that good an ending. But the beginning, as you said on earlier podcasts, the beginning of the match is, or the end of a match doesn't necessarily say.
Oh yeah, 100%.
The beginning of that match, I was drawn out of it.
No, I wasn't really drawn out of it.
Yeah, so, no, but that's, you know.
Yeah, it's your opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
I gave it an 8 because I really enjoyed the match. To be honest, because maybe it's different because I don't watch MMA.
Yeah.
So the beginning of the match to me, although it had an MMA feel to it, I didn't identify with much of it. So just it was just a match to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's understandable. So yeah, I gave it a 7 out of 10. As I say, I mean, I kind of started going off TNA as a product here. And the reason being was if you think of like 05, 06, 07 TNA, it wasn't so much, it wasn't trying to be another company or another brand, it was just being TNA.
Yeah.
And then in 08, obviously, you get your first taste of, oh, should we check what we can do in the mixed martial arts world, which is eventually now turned into Bellator, in which, you know, I texted the other week when I bit to UFC fans. It's because basically I was like, oh, fucking, why is there a masked person in fucking Bellator? Oh, fucking wrestling getting their hands on your, like, mixed martial arts and ruining the sport. And I was like, right, okay, I'm going to buy it now. And I did buy it. I was like, right, Brock Lesnar, fake wrestler, come in, dominated your heavyweight division. Kurt Angle, Dana White was trying to fucking goad him into coming to UFC for a good year. He turned it down to stay professional wrestling. Wes Gracie trains half of the WWE locker room these days.
Yes.
And that is here a disgrace to your fucking sport as well. And just sort
all
of went,
all the promos they use. Or yeah, they I said. Yeah, they're wrestling. They're, obviously, they're shoot fighting. Yeah. Are, but.
Oh, it's all a their
production.
Fight.
All their production is wrestling orientated.
And then 2 days later, fucking Joe Rogan, who I just think is a fucking bell end anyway, I thought that from his Fear Factor days, he turned around and he's like, oh, UFC's real, and wrestling is for people that sit there and cry at home because they think it's real, and when their favourite doesn't win, they can't take it. And I just thought, all right, Joe, fair enough. There probably is fans like that out there, but you can't stereotype an entire group of fans or a product, you know?
All MMA fans are meatheads that sit there wishing they could be old.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's exactly what I said. It's either fucking meatheads or it's fucking geeks who have never had a fight in their life and live vicariously through these people that are genuinely hard.
Yeah.
That's my fault on UFC fan.
But that's I don't care.
I don't care.
If people want a label,
yeah,
I'll label.
Yeah, precisely. No, and that was it. And to be fair, I turned around because people commenting on it were both wrestling fans and the attitude there. I was like, oh, by the way, did you enjoy wrestling through 1999 to 2002? And obviously I never got a reply from that, and it was like, right, well, you've been shut up, dickheads. But yeah, all in all though, fucking hell, we've gone through him quickly, haven't we? It's my joke.
but then we'll have a chat about other things as well. But like, what did you give him for in ring then?
I gave him a 7.5.
So did I.
I couldn't quite give him an 8 because, as I say, I like the fact that everything does has a purpose. But as you said before, his match formula pretty much the same every match.
Yeah, and not only that, there are some timing issues there that I noticed all the matches. Yeah. I mean, he might obviously be better now, or there might be these might not be his best matches, but we can only really go on what we've seen.
Yeah, promo. I'm actually going to stick a promo if he's in here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember this, but when he was world champion, he was meant to team against Angle, AJ and Tomko with Nash and Scott Hall.
Mm.
And Scott Hall didn't turn up to the show because he was pissed. And basically, Jeff Jarrett turned around to Joe and said, look, you go out on live mic, say whatever you want to say, pick a tag partner, Hall hasn't turned up. And he shoots on fucking Nash, he shoots on Hall. He says about, because it's the main event of a pay-per-view, and he said, right, I turned around to everyone in the back and was like, who wants to fucking go out in the main event tonight? And he said, like, every single X-Division wrestler was like, yeah, give me the opportunity. And he says he's sick to death of being in a company where people are leaving another company to come and fucking boost up their fucking pensions. And it's like, I love that passion.
Yeah.
Because as much as I say WWE missed a trick with Joe, I don't think they would have booked Joe the way he was booked in TNA. And he loved TNA. And I respect that.
Yeah.
I respect the fact that he loved his company that much. It's the same with Sting. I mean, I know Sting's now trying to come to WWE. But the reason he never came to WWE was because he was a very much a solid WCW guy, and he didn't want his leg to see tarnished because he was a WCW guy in WWE, like many others did. And I respect that, and I respect that Joe spoke his mind, so I'm going to put that in here.
That he would not be alone. Samoa Joe, Kevin Nash, who's going to join them as the third man?
Well, I mean, who do you pick? Who do you trust? One thing I will say about this, you've got two extremely mad individuals.
Uh-oh.
It's Joe and Nash right now.
And Samoa Joe's got the microphone, and he's going to vent.
You'll get your time. You know what? You know what? I'll tell you what. Backstage, I was told to come out here, and they said, Joe, the fans love you, and if there's one thing they trust, it's you. And we want you to go out there, and we want you to tell these people something that'll make them satisfied with the fact that Scott Hall no-showed this event tonight. You know, I would love to tell you people that he'd be coming down that ramp a little bit later on, but the fact of the matter is, he punked out on me, and he punked out on every single fan in this building tonight.
Wow.
Strong words.
He will too. Kevin will too. Yep, that's true.
And then it got me thinking. I was back there, and I said, well, you know what? I could walk out there. I could go 2-on-3 with Kevin and make the best of it. But you know what? I also realized another thing. They just gave me a live mic on pay-per-view.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
So, if you all don't mind, I'd like to get a few things off my chest. Number one, in TNA, we have two types of wrestlers. We have TNA diehards who come here and entertain and bust their ass for these fans every night of the week.
Oh, he's passionate.
Frustrated, too.
And we got superstars who think they can come and do whatever they want, however they feel like. We have superstars who come out here and not only screw us, the hardworking wrestlers of TNA, but they screw each and every fan who paid to see them, no matter how old they are. So let me make this real simple. Let me explain to you what TNA is. TNA is the Motor City Machine Guns coming down here and busting their ass and trying to make a break in this business. TNA is Black Machismo doing his damnedest to entertain every single fan in this building and show them what's up. TNA is Samoa Joe coming in here and doing what he does best, wrestle and be the best damn professional wrestler in the world. TNA is a bunch of hardworking young athletes who are looking to change the wrestling world. Guys who held down this business while others profiteered from it. TNA is the men who come in here, risk their lives on scaffoldings, on wires, while others show up and pad their pensions. So I'll tell you what, Scott Hall, Chico, kiss my ass. You punked out and you're a punk.
Are you mad? No, go ahead, fire me, I don't care.
So tonight, I went in that locker room, and they said, hey, they called everybody in the world trying to get me a new partner. But I said, no, we don't need anybody. We got everybody we need in the back right now. So I walked to the back, and I said, hey, who wants to go out there in the main event tonight, and who wants to get into a fight? And every damn one of the X Division wrestlers stood up. I walked in the back and I said, who wants to come out and get in a fight in the main event tonight? And every single young wrestler whose first TV contract was here at TNA stood up and said, me. But one in particular, bloody, beaten, battered, bruised, and overlooked by everybody in the world, looked at me and said, Joe, please give me the shot. And without further ado, I announce my partner, a man who will show up. A man who will be here and do what he needs to do. A man who's ready for a fight. And a man who will be even when he's an old man. Without further ado, I bring out my tag team partner, Showtime Eric Young. Get out here, let's kick some ass.
What on...
all in all, I gave him a 7 prime.
I gave him a 7 as well.
Because I can't really... think of anything that
he's not bad on the mic, yeah, but he's not sensational. He's just below, isn't he?
He's not far off, he's just below.
Character?
I gave him 7.5. I quite like the Samoa Joe character.
I gave it a 7.
Yeah, fair enough. Success.
Interesting one. How do you measure success of it? I gave it a 5.
See, right, I gave him, this might be a bit generous, I gave him a 6.5
right.
On the basis that he has won numerous titles everywhere he's been, but unfortunately, if you haven't won it in the big boys, it's like
that's the reason champion. You got 5. Yeah, for me, is the fact that, yeah, okay, he has won the title, but even in TNA, he hasn't held the world title that many times, and not even for that long either, I don't believe. So,
yeah, as I said, I mean, I've given him 6.5, but he's won
overall. That means that I give him 63.
Yeah, I'm 1.5 ahead. I gave him 64.5, which I think gives him 63.75. Probably about right. He's ahead of Kane now. Is that right?
Is he ahead of Kane?
I think he's ahead of Kane. I think he's actually gone middle of the pack.
He's ahead of DDP. I don't know that much.
I'm going to find it hard for anyone to get below DDP. Yeah, he is above Kane. What was it? What did we just say? 63.75. Which, to be honest, it's not bad.
No.
For someone that has never made it really into to the big time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, his match quality helped him.
Better than a seasoned veteran like Kane.
Yeah,
but
his match quality helped him.
Yeah. Yeah. And probably his character maybe interests people like us a little bit more.
Yeah, and definitely his wrestling ability. Like his wrestling stance and technique would interest us more.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I quite enjoyed reviewing him, to be honest.
I did. It's quite nice to give WWE Network a little bit of a break.
Yeah. Been working overtime
for a couple of weeks. Because I haven't been able to really watch WWE Network without having a purpose for watching it. It's been quite nice to just sit back and catch up on like the Monday Night Wars and stuff. On that note, are you enjoying the Monday Night Wars thing on WWE Network?
It's very interesting. It's an interesting way they're doing it. They recap a lot of things in each episode, but with an overall focus on different parts of it, which I like. I like it's not just a timeline thing. They're not just going through the like an extent, because we obviously both got the Monday Night War DVD. I like the fact that it's not just a rehash of that and going from start to finish with that. I like the fact that they're focusing on different parts of it, but also recapping what's going on at the same time.
I mean, one thing I've got from it, there's two episodes that really run through to me. Mick Foley one. Mm-hmm. I think I forgot about a lot of what Mick Foley did in the Attitude Era. Not from match quality wise, but just in general what he went through. And to be honest, fucking Mick Foley to get to where he got to in the Attitude Era, fucking...
It's impressive.
It's very impressive. And the other thing as well, I mean, I want to do his podcast soon because his match qualities is probably what got me into wrestling. But I watching Bret Hart, it's so sad that a career, from what I can say, I mean, obviously, as you say, you never watched this, you might not have the best
I just had WCW Bret, that's all I have.
And the thing with it, Bret really was a phenomenal fucking wrestler, and for his career to end in such a anticlimactic way, which, no, don't get me wrong, to be fair, I see why Vince done what he did. because if Brett's not willing to drop your title and then go to your rival company, which in fairness, Vince manoeuvred him to get there as well.
Of course he did.
I can see why he'd done it. It's just a shame that the relationship between Michaels, Vince and Brett got to that sort of level.
Obviously, yeah. I mean, Michaels takes a lot of the brunt of the blame for it. But looking back on the Bret Hart episode of Monday Night Wars, I think Brett has to take quite a lot of it on the chin himself.
Yeah. I agree with that, yeah.
As much as you don't like the bloke, why was it such a rough deal for Brett to drop the belt to Michaels?
Mm.
And especially if you're leaving the company.
Mm.
Like, you're leaving. It's your decision. I know that Vince obviously said, I'm not going to pay you this amount of money.
Mm.
Which...
Yeah.
Is his prerogative.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you think at the time, Vince has obviously said, oh, we need to change our directive or our direction in the company. We need to be a bit more ballsy, a bit more fucking cutthroat and stuff. And Brett doesn't agree with the direction. If Vince wanted to put the fucking belt on fucking Doink the Clown at the time, it's his prerogative.
Of course it is. It's his company. Like, and that's what I don't. Brett, obviously, I think Brett's ego got the better of him.
Massively. And I mean, if you ever were as well, I mean, if you ever get a chance, the other thing I'd say to watch is WWE's Greatest Rivalry, when you see Shawn and Brett sit down together and actually cover the start to finish of how they got from being best of mates to that level.
Very,
to
very
the eventual reconciliation.
What do you think of Raw this week, obviously?
I haven't watched all of it. I've sort of skimmed through. I thought, again, there was a couple of good matches. I like the fact they're really positioning Dean Ambrose as a number two at the moment, which obviously through Roman Reigns' injury and Daniel Bryan.
Well, I think that Ambrose might even have been the number two, even without... Because I think they're positioning an Ambrose title shot at the Rumble.
Mm. It's definitely coming.
Because Ambrose isn't going to... I think that's what they're working towards. I think Ambrose is going to be the next one that fights Brock Lesnar singly. And it'll probably be at the Rumble.
I also think I'm loving the way Seth Rollins is booked at the moment. In the fact that he's starting fires and then he's literally hiding behind Orton, Kane, Triple H.
I think that opens up the face turn from Orton.
You can already see the seeds, can't you?
Like, you get Orton Rollins, even if you get 2 months of them two in the ring together.
Phenomenal.
It's like wrestling porn.
It is great. As I say, I think next year, by SummerSlam next year, we will have all three members of the Shield in the ring together for that title. What did you make of the Seth Rollins cash-in attempt at Night of Champions? I mean, the main event for me, I kind of zoned off on.
It was not very well done. The right ideas there. I think that obviously they need to sow the seeds of Lesnar, Triple H not necessarily wanting Lesnar as champion.
Mm.
Being the lesser of two evils for Triple H, I think is probably the best term to use. Yeah. Him and Cena, he'd rather Brock be champion, but he obviously ultimately wants Orton or Rollins champion. Yeah. If you're looking from the authority point of view.
Yeah.
I thought it could have been a little bit better done. I think the timing was off a little bit on it with certain things. It was okay.
Mm.
It was okay. As much as a lot of people are slagging off for at the moment, there are parts of it that are really entertaining.
Yeah.
Like the Ambrose stuff this week was phenomenal.
Mm.
He is genuinely entertaining.
Mm.
And the Miz stuff keeps entertaining me week in, week out.
Yeah, what did you make of the Triple H comment to Miz? Like, I mean, obviously it's fucking...
If you're coming here,
you won't be doing your straight DVD things. It's kind of like, come and think about this. The writers at this point, think about this. Triple H has been in two of your fucking straight DVD movies.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
For starters. And two, you are actually slagging off your movie company. You're trying to get big.
Yeah, I think it was just the fact that it was just for entertainment purposes.
Oh, of course it was, yeah.
I think not many people would have taken it too literally.
Mm.
But the whole what they're building nicely with now, and I think they might do, is put the US belt on Sander.
Yeah, I mean, the other way I see it possibly going soon is the Rusev character is going to win the US title. Just because obviously you've got all these people trying to fight for the US. Imagine the Russian with the United States Championship.
Yeah, it's good heat. But then the way I would like to see it booked is Sandow beat Sheamus soon for the title, and then have the Miz and Mizdow being both champions. Basically, Mizdow will still mirror image Miz until you get to that point where you split them.
Yeah.
And then you've got the unification.
Yeah.
Because I do think they want to go down that route.
I think they've got to now, because you don't need both belts. Yeah.
No. And it would make that belt much more important. Mm. At the moment, having two belts that are similar level, you don't really decipher between the two. If you just have one belt, just keep the Intercontinental belt. Keep it and have the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, the Intercontinental, the Divas, and the Tag Team. Those belts then all of a sudden mean something.
Because we were talking about this the other day, weren't we, with the number two contenders on Twitter, weren't we?
Yeah.
Sort of saying it would be nice for the IC to get to a level where it could main event a Raw.
Yeah, which I think it could comfortably do that at the moment. Yeah. That's what's annoying. Like the Miz Ziggler matches can go 20 minutes at the end of a Raw comfortably. You've got a 3-hour show.
This is what I struggle with the WWE. You know, go on the extra hour, fair enough, do it. If the network's going to offer you an extra hour, why not have a go, is probably what I'd say. But how are they struggling to book 3 hours when they was quite comfortable on the two?
I think because people have an automatic thought in their mind, they're not going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. For me, I still am able to watch the 3-hour Raws.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why some people don't like some bits of it. But I think it's only going to get better as the WWE progresses. Because, and this is the reason, WWE are in a massive transitional period currently.
Yeah.
Right? And just look at all these people saying how good NXT is. It won't be long till 3 or 4 of them are on the main roster.
Well, as we said, so then
you've got Cena, Orton, your ex-Shield members, Miz, Ziggler, Sandow, Sheamus. Your four or five that come up from NXT, maybe even more than that. Now you've got like Steen, Kenta, all of them. Like they're all going to come up. You've got 4 or 5 of them, right? You've then got your Usos, the Wyatts. You've got Goldust, Stardust. You've got the Divas division.
Which I've got to say, fucking Flair's daughter
looks good when she comes up.
Phenomenal
with Paige
in the ring, really.
Right, and then you've got. Even if AJ leaves, even if AJ doesn't leave, whichever way around it is, you've got Paige, you've got Charlotte, you've got that other young girl in NXT, Bayley's.
Yeah.
She's a different type of character.
Yeah.
So you tell me how that's not a strong roster.
To
fill 3 hours.
Yeah.
Right? And then what they need to then start doing, and I think they will move towards it, is there will be a decent amount of wrestling coupled in with storylines. Because WWE is still the best at telling storylines.
There's no doubt. Wholeheartedly agree with that.
It's just they are going through a transitional period. Because once soon Ambrose Rollins reigns are all going to be main event.
Yeah.
They're going to be out and out main eventers, right? So then you're going to have your Cena, your Ortons, them three as main eventers, them pushing maybe one of the others from NXT into that main event picture. You've got a lot of main eventers then. Your upper mid card becomes quite strong as well with a few of the NXT lads, your Miz, Ziggler, Sheamus, them lot. Then your lower mid card gets decent because you've got a few of the NXT lads and you've got the tag teams, you've got the Wyatts. Because not even talk about Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt's going to be a main eventer.
Do you find it weird with the Bray Wyatt character at the moment? He he's just fit like.
I think they need to, they, as JR says in his podcast, and so one of the only things I agree with, they need to either make him face or heel.
Mm.
His character needs to be defined.
Yeah.
And the best way, and as I say, the best way to do it for that is to get jump on one of the faces.
Mm.
One of the Ambrose, yeah. Absolutely flying at the moment. What if Bray Wyatt, when Ambrose does get a chance to face Brock Lesnar, that Wyatt costs him the title?
Mm. Well, that's the thing. If you think when
Wyatt Ambrose at Mania next year.
When Wyatt actually had his heat was when he had his rivalry with Daniel Bryan, the hottest baby face in the company, and then everyone hated him. The problem was next, and it was probably a good rub for him, but I think it, in essence, it sort of killed the mystique of the character, was rivalry with Cena.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, you always know how it's going to go as well with a Cena. Eventually, Cena was always going to come out on top in that rivalry.
But that's what I mean. So you have, say that Lesnar fights Ambrose at the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Wyatt costs him, and you build to an Ambrose Wyatt at Mania. That's a great match.
Yeah.
That's a great match with something that means something, like the fact that Ambrose costs a title, but Wyatt goes into it. That's what will happen. The fact is, the WWE is going in the right direction.
Yeah.
No matter what people moan and groan about and slag it off, the fact is they're building into the right direction, and it will come to that. But they say all the time, it's a slow burn with people. You can't pluck someone out of NXT and go, bang, you're in a main event with John Cena, Randy Orton, and Brock Lesnar. A, because it's going to piss people off in the locker room.
Yeah.
B, it makes no logical sense.
Mm-hmm.
Unless someone's coming in, like the Big Show did when he came in as a giant at WCW, 6-7 foot tall, massive build.
Hey, like, marketer.
Not so much that. Realistic. Yeah. It has to be realism.
Mm.
If Adrian Neville or one of the other Kent or anyone comes up to the main roster and goes into the main event, they're athletes, but it's not realistic that they're going to be able to go in and beat John Cena.
Mm.
Daniel Bryan. It took 3 years to build Daniel Bryan into being a believable main eventer.
Mm.
Not some like because. I don't care what people say, about all these internet marks for Daniel Bryan for years and years and years and years and years, right? If you bring him in straight off of the fucking, what was the show, but NXT back then, wasn't it?
Yeah. But it was fucking awful NXT.
You bring him straight in off NXT and make him the main event, which is what everyone in the wrestling community were climbing for. The fact that he was going to be a main event straight away, right? It's not believable. The bloke's 5'11" or whatever he is.
Well, yeah, he's tiny, isn't he?
Right? He's not built. And at that point, he didn't have the believability factor with him. No one believed it. Right? So you can't do that. And if he had been pushed to the main event level at that point, and then got beaten by Cena, got beaten by so-and-so, people are going to slag it off.
And on top of that, it would kill his character.
Of course it would.
It would kill it dead before it started. Yeah.
It's a slow burn. And they know better than we do, right? And I don't care what fucking people say. All right, we'll all slag it off and say, I don't understand why they did this. I don't understand why they did that. Triple H has been involved in wrestling now for 30 years, probably.
Yeah.
20 years, 20, 25 years, something like that, right? Vince McMahon is a genius.
Mm.
Okay. I understand where people are coming from, saying that his ideas might be a little bit stale.
Mm.
But Vince probably knows that himself, and hence why he doesn't do as much of the writing for the show anymore.
Well, from what I saw on the internet this week, a recently sacked WWE writer, apparently Raw this week was getting rewrote whilst the show was going on.
Yeah.
And he said the writers nowadays just tend to write, try and figure out what Vince McMahon's thinking and try and write to that as opposed to write for the TV audience.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, I mean, as you say, when it comes down to it, Vince will always have his moments of inspiration. But I think the thing as well, if you know, we all talk about the Attitude Era, like you said earlier, when someone put NXT better than Attitude Era, the thing that made the boom period in wrestling so good, and it's simple logic, it's competition.
Of course, yeah.
Vince hasn't got competition.
It's like, for example, using a British term.
Yeah.
Like, it's like EastEnders not having Coronation Street to compete with.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. If you don't have something to compete with, then you're not pushing yourself. Mm. It's like if I'm at work and I don't have a promotion to go for, or I have a promotion to go for, but no one else is in the running for it. There's no competition for it. I'm not going to work as hard to get that promotion as I would if there were three people interviewing for it.
Exactly.
Right? That's pure logic of human nature.
Exactly.
And the fact is that at the moment, WWE probably, they don't have to take any chances.
Mm.
That's what made the Attitude Era what it was. Both companies took risks.
Yeah.
WWE don't have to take risks to be a successful company.
No, exactly. And, you know, the other thing as well, like...
But it will never change, though.
No.
But this is what I'm saying about the fact is that what Triple H is building it towards the right direction is going back towards wrestling.
Mm.
And with wrestling, the storyline's becoming built.
Mm.
If you've got good wrestling matches, like the Daniel Bryan stuff that we've had, the storyline builds itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because the Daniel Bryan authority storyline is not an ingenious one. It's what's been done a million and one times in four different companies.
Mm-hmm.
But it works.
Yeah.
And it'll be the same going forward. Bray Wyatt costing Dean Ambrose the world title because Wyatt thinks he should be in that spot.
Mm-hmm.
They then rival for 3 months.
Yeah.
It's simplistic, but it will be great television because A, the match quality will be good,
yeah.
So people will be interested to see it. B, the mic skills of both of them too are great, so it will work.
Yeah.
It'll have good chemistry,
mm-hmm.
And that's a simple fact of that. And I think that as we go forward, it'll happen more.
I mean, the other thing as well, you got to talk about. I mean, we'll quickly finish up on this point before we say what we're doing next and stuff. But when you talk about Vince and Triple H being a genius, go back to March of this year. CM Punk has left. There's CM Punk chants in every arena. They're about to go to Chicago. The internet wrestling community start the hashtag, we're taking over Raw tonight.
Yeah.
Vince spots that. He starts the show by playing CM Punk's music and sends Paul Heyman out.
And shuts them up.
And everyone, it was like, one, no other person could have got away with doing that but Paul Heyman. Two, it stops them in their tracks.
Yeah.
Because they was expecting
ignore it. They were expecting the WWE to ignore all night whilst they chanted CM Punk from minute one to minute end. But once they played the music and acknowledged it, it's like little kids.
Yeah.
Cut them off.
Yeah. And then, an hour later... You talk about the Raw, they actually hashtagged it themselves, hashtag Raw Takeover. Triple H came out, was saying about how Raw's taken over, a couple of big matches happened. Then Daniel Bryan does his We're Taking Over Raw and brings the fucking fans into the ring to get his match with Triple H.
So the trend that had been started by anti-Raw people, rest of the WWE turned into a positive.
Yeah, that is two geniuses at work.
Of course it is.
And you've got to love it. We're both sitting here with smirks on our face because he sits there and it's like...
But Triple H and Steph do that regularly.
Mm.
Like, they don't ignore the CM Punk chants. No. Like, this week on Raw.
Quitter, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Steph said, I understand why you support a quitter as all of you in this arena are just that, just quitters and never go after your dream.
Mm.
And it is... They're geniuses at it because they're so good at improv. Steph, Vince, Triple H, all brilliant at improv in the ring and know how the wrestling world works.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, on that note, obviously, next week, I've got a bit of a toss-up, really. Obviously, next Sunday, we're on Sunday Seg, which I'm quite looking forward to, actually.
Yeah,
to be honest, it'll be very interesting for that.
I think I'll have different opinions to them.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. But then that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
You know, you don't want to sit there and agree. What I was going to say is, do we want to just record the podcast after we've done that on next week?
That's fine. Yeah, no, we'll do that on Sunday because
makes sense, doesn't it? And then Saturday, we could both have a bit of a lie in next
Saturday. Exactly, yeah. And then who are we on to next?
This is where I want to toss up, because obviously you're Hell in a Cell series here. We usually do 3 episodes and then a bonus. I didn't know if we wanted to do a Hell in a Cell bonus episode.
No.
Or another 2 options, I was going to go maybe Bret Hart, or 3 options, Bret Hart, Foley or Punk would be the 3 I throw out there.
Would it make sense to do Punk, as we've just done Samoa Joe?
Yeah, and I think it's probably about the right time to put Punk to bed, as far as
stop having the KOTR takeover.
We don't want that taking over.
We don't want to fan Charlotte and CM Punk every time we.
So yeah, we'll do CM Punk next time, which also works out quite well, because obviously the person we've just covered is pretty much one of his early rivals. And he went in the opposite direction.
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah. On a final note, Samoa Joe,
I enjoyed watching all of his matches, except the Daniels one, because they pissed me off early on. But I still enjoyed it towards the end.
Yeah.
I like Samoa Joe. And as we've always said, he's one of the ones that I would have liked to have seen in WWE at some point.
Yeah.
To give a go.
But in the current roster, would there be anyone you'd see him having a dream match with?
Him, Bray Wyatt would be interesting.
Mm.
I think they work similar styles.
Mm.
I think Joe would have a very good match with a lot of people. Mm. I think Joe versus Rollins or Ambrose would be great.
Mm.
Joe versus Bryan, I assume, would be epic.
Randy.
Oh, Joe Randy Orton would be interesting. Because Samoa Joe's background and everything, it would be like, because I definitely think they should go down the route of Randy, of the fact that business is in his blood. He's been given everything. I know they keep mentioning it. Been given everything he's been given. Like, he should embrace that.
Yeah.
And Joe, coming from wrestling in the independents for years, in the other company for years, facing Orton would be epic. But it's never gonna happen.
It's never gonna happen. Nah, exactly.
But yeah, Joe, I enjoyed watching all that. It was interesting, and I'm looking forward to doing Punk.
Yeah, obviously follow us on the Twitter, which is KOTR Podcast.
iTunes, Podomatic for this episode, and all of our other episodes as
well. Obviously we're on Sunday Seg next Sunday, looking forward to that. We're also going to try, before the end of the year, if we can, if not, definitely next year, have a look at this IPW.
Yeah, I want to get down there.
As it's a Kent company, it's not, I've got a car, I'll pick this up, go down there. And have a look at that. But thanks for listening. Quite enjoyed doing that, and we're looking forward to doing Punk next week.
See you later.
Yeah, see you later. Ta-da.